Dynasty Refinery Podcast, your home of in-depth dynasty analysis with your host, Michael Royer, and co-host, Jared Fox. Prepare for content to drop in 3, 2, 1.
Welcome to the Dynasty Refinery Podcast. I'm your host, Michael Royer. You can find me on Twitter at Dynasty_DadFF. And I'm here with my co-host, Jared Fox. You can find him on Twitter at Dynasty Refinery. How you doing today, buddy?
Pretty good. How about yourself?
I am fantastic. You know, we have an incredible guest here that we're going to introduce in a little bit. But before that, I'd like to talk about our sponsor. We're excited to announce that we've teamed up with DraftKits.co again this season. At the Dynasty Refinery, we're all about improving every aspect of your fantasy football experience. Their draft boards are the icing on the cake. I mean, these things make the highest quality draft boards for 8 to 16 teams, color graphic labels. They have IDP. They have auction where you can put the values, custom reusable vinyl boards. I just got mine in the mail today. It is beautiful. They are so confident that it would be an NFL season, we are as well, that they're offering a 2021 player stickers for free if there is no football, if you order before August 1st. They're confident in it. We're confident in it. And we're so confident in this product that if you guys use the code REFINE on DraftKits.co, you guys will get a 10% discount. And, you know, you guys got to check these guys out. They are fantastic.
Yes, and with those stickers that go unused, you can be like Mike and get a little crafty with it, put some magnets on the back and stick them on your fridge.
I am the Dynasty Dad, so, you know, I got to be as creative as possible. You come over to my house, there's going to be, you know, a Chris Godwin magnet. I think there's a Cooper Cup. You know, my kids love those kind of things for putting up the artwork. So our guest tonight obviously needs no introduction. You know, he's the co-owner of Dynasty League Football, host of Dynasty Blueprint. Listeners, you guys are in for a treat. Let me welcome Ryan McDowell to the show. How you doing?
I'm doing well, guys. How are you?
We are thrilled to have you on here. It's the most exciting time of the year, you know, I mean, at least for us. The Scott Fishbowl has come. Most of us have finished, except for Jared. You know, he's still waiting to finish out his draft here, you know. But we absolutely love this time of year. We both have said when we got our invites last year for the first time, it was like Christmas. We, you know, we got that email. It felt so surreal. And I know you're more involved with this year, you know, than ever and so close to Scott. Why don't you tell us a little bit, you know, about your Scott Fishbowl experience over the years and, you know, what it's meant to the community and what it's meant to you?
Oh, yeah. I mean, obviously, it's a huge event that Scott takes on every year that now for 10 years running. And I started out, you know, just like everyone else, being super excited the first time I got my invite, which has probably been, I don't know, 6 or 7 years now. I think that's about the time it really started to grow. For Scott, it began as a league that he ran on the site that he owned at that time, which was FF Oasis, and really just kind of a league that he wanted to do with his writers and his readers. And some other analysts. I believe there were 32 teams the first year. I think that's what he said. I was not one of those. Wasn't lucky enough to be involved in that at that point. But of course, it's grown. I mean, probably I'm sure more than he could ever have imagined, or more than anyone could have ever imagined. And then, basically, as we kind of became friends through fantasy football and dynasty football and both being commissioners of different leagues and things. We started the Commission Possible podcast together a few years ago. And I mean, it was clear that as it grew that Scott could use a hand, and I was glad to help him out with whatever he needed. So 2 or 3 years ago, that's what I started doing. And it began really just by, you know, entering names into MFL and things like that. Some of that real tedious work that, you know, you can't do it for 1,000 teams on your own. If anybody could, it would be Scott, but you know, I wanted to lighten the load a little bit, I guess, for him. And then, yeah, my role has grown a little bit over the past couple of years to helping send invites and actually get to choose the people who participate in the league, which is super fun. You guys talked about your excitement the first time you got the invitation, and to be able to send those out and know that it's, you know, it's making somebody's day or, you know, maybe even making their fantasy season. Maybe it serves as a highlight for them. It's just an awesome thing to be a part of from that standpoint, kind of leading up to the event. And then when the drafts actually begin and, you know, if you're a part of that fantasy community on Twitter, I mean, that's all that anyone is talking about. So it's just awesome to see how it's grown, how the donations have grown over the years and helped, you know, help so many families around the country. And I mean, that's just another way that Scott has been so generous and so kind. Not only is he taking on this huge event to bring the community together and to help people in his community in Minnesota, but he also spreads it out. He sends money to me and I can shop in Louisville. He sends money, you know, to New York and to California and all over the country that families who need it around Christmas time can get that extra help, which is just awesome.
Yeah, everything Scott's done with this has been amazing. And I know we were both involved in the Fantasy Cares Eliminator that John Bosch put on. And it's really, I'm glad you said that. Like year one, it was 32 people, you know, and this year, you know, well over 1,400. And he even added, you know, it was supposed to be 1,200 and even added some. And it's just, it's so exciting on Twitter to see people talk about their first time, you know what I mean? And just, this is only our second year, but we were, you know, congratulating those people and those people would be doing the same thing next year. And it's just such a phenomenal experience just to be a part of, and we absolutely loved it. One thing that I really like that you guys have been doing at Dynasty Blueprint lately is the Dynasty team building segments. You know, you guys have been having people on. You had Scott Connor on. You know, I really, we've been having a lot of guests on, really just try to talk about different philosophies and different strategies of team building. And Scott Fishbowl had so many different strategies. It's not even funny. You know, everybody felt like they had the blueprint and they felt like they had some kind of cheat code on the way in. And, you know, you see people, they created all these spreadsheets and all the data and it just, you know, everybody's so into it. Why don't you talk to us a little bit about, you know, your particular draft strategy. I have your draft here in front of me. And then we're going to break down several different strategies and talk about how all these different Dynasty analysts and fans went about this. And, you know, so why don't you run us through the scoring a little bit and then why you chose, you know, start out the way you started your draft?
Sure. First of all, you're totally right that there are so many strategies that you can see employed in this league, not only just because there's so many people. So obviously you're going to see a variety there, but the way Scott has set up the league also lends itself to some flexibility and different strategies. So always deep starters, 11 starters, 11 starting players in your lineup. You've got to start two running backs. I know a lot of people used to like to punt running back or go that zero running back, and you still saw that some this year for sure, but you've got to start two. So it kind of makes that strategy tougher. The premiums for the quarterback and the tight end positions pushes some people to focus on those. I know we saw a lot of quarterback heavy lineups. We saw a few tight end heavy lineups as well. So all of that makes you think maybe you can ignore the wide receiver position, which again, a lot of people did for quite a while, but you still have to start three every week. So you can only wait so long. Basically what Scott has put together is it's, you know, it's just like a giant puzzle that you're trying to put together, you know, weeks or a couple months before the season starts. That's just one thing that adds to the challenge. That last Sunday before the drafts kicked off, I saw quite a few people basically say they were going with the wing it strategy, that they hadn't really done any research, or they thought back to last year when they put in hours and hours of research and it didn't pay off. That's probably where I fit in. I did not put in a ton of research. I definitely checked out some of the tools that Curtis Patrick and Mike Beers, the guys over at RotoViz, had put together. They had a whole section of their website dedicated to SFB, which was very cool to see also. But I checked out some of that. Use some of the ADP that a couple different people had put together. So kind of started ballparking who I might get in that second, third round, because I did have the 101. So of course I knew who that was going to be. But between just trying to help Scott get ready for it and just kind of the general busyness, I've taken two vacations in the past 3 weeks, which was not great timing for SFB purposes. Mm. But I didn't put in as much work ahead of time as I probably should have. And honestly, I'm checking out some of the lineups we're going to look at tonight that were, you know, clearly these guys went in with a strategy, you know, right or wrong, or regardless of how it will eventually work out. They had a plan. And one thing I like to do, and we'll get into this, is I just want to find their 11 best players, right? I just want to see what does their starting lineup actually look like. And when I look at that for my team, it's not so impressive. So I'm feeling like right now, like I should have put in some more time.
Well, I love your first four picks. I mean, you know, Christian McCaffrey, obviously you can't go wrong there. And then you get Carson Wentz. We're both, you know, huge Eagles fans. We're close to Philadelphia here. Carson Wentz, you know, what he did last year with that JV offense, you know, it was phenomenal down the stretch. And then Austin Eckler, we both love him, you know, and I got him in my draft. I'm not sure if you did. And then Daniel Jones, which one thing from last year is I had a very safe team. This year I was trying to take those high ceiling guys, and Daniel Jones is just that. You know, he's a guy that if you make those playoffs, he's going to propel you there with the number of 40 point games he had last year in this particular format. You know, that gives you an opportunity with, you know, how much of that do you look into as like, because there's, you know, 1400 teams, how much do you put into, I got to make sure I have the highest ceiling guys, or does that change anything with the way you draft in the Scott Fishbowl? I think last year, Jared and I were just so excited to be in it. We were just drafting, you know, and that's what it really is the fun of it. I know there were a couple guys that were just talking to me and they're like, I can't figure out, I'm so stressed out, I don't know who to take here. And I'm like, the idea of this is to be fun, to, you know, really donate to Fantasy Cares, to enjoy this time, you know, and that to me is the most important thing to take away from it.
Yeah, I agree totally on that. And I'm sure you guys were involved in some of the chats. You know, we had a DM chat going with some other folks who had the 101. I was in another one with just the people in my division and got to meet and interact with some people that I never had before. And along with just having fun and just kind of enjoying, you know, enjoying the ride, that's the other great part of what Scott has put together, that it is to build up the community, to expand your reach and get to interact with some people you haven't before. So I love that part. And I mean, in reality, there's 1,440 teams, right? This is the biggest SFB ever. And only one person is going to come away ultimately happy with this. And, you know, odds are pretty strong. It's not going to be me. It's not going to be one of you guys, you know, sorry to say that, but so you just got to enjoy the draft. I think the draft is the best part, you know, that week or 10 days, whatever it might be, where the whole community is seemingly focused on that and talking about it. And, you know, you can post your draft update and get some feedback from everybody. That really is the best part of it. And, you know, when the season starts, you know, fingers crossed, knock on wood, when the season starts, then you can start playing the waiver wire. You start submitting that lineup every week. And just like any other league, you do your best to win, to make the playoffs, and to have some success.
Yeah. Yeah. And speaking of waiver wires and Scott Fishbowl, I kind of found out the hard way last year. I went and picked Andrew Luck in the second round. Okay. So my dreams were shattered pretty early, but I was like, all right, maybe I can salvage this just a little bit if I get Jacoby Brissett here in the waivers. Well, you know, I probably put down, what do you get, $100? Is that what it is?
Yeah. Yep. Yeah.
So I probably put down maybe like $70 on him. I was like, that's got to get him.
Nope.
$100. Yep. And I was like, all right, so if there's a good player that comes up, especially a quarterback, you put down on him in Scott Fishbowl.
Absolutely. That's one of those lessons you learn, especially that first waiver wire. When in a typical year, I guess, you know, we've had training camp, we've had unfortunately, usually some injuries or even crazier situations like last year with Andrew Luck. And those players, like you said, especially if it's a quarterback, they're going to go for the max amount. So it was Brissett in preseason. It was Gardner Minshew, you know, in week two or three, whatever it was. But there were a few guys last year who were max players.
Yeah, absolutely. You brought up a great point. And to me, the most fun is obviously the interaction with the Twitter community on this. You know, I started the 105 group chat because that was the pick. You know, by the way, we absolutely love the fact that you and Scott gave us the opportunity to pick, you know, what division. And Thundercats was like my favorite show growing up. At 105, yes. I was like, it's nice. It adds another element where you're just like, I'm more involved with it. You know, like my kids actually made my AVI for Twitter, you know, and it was like, they're asking what Thundercats is and who was, and my kids actually know what the Scott Fishbowl is, you know, and they're talking to their friends and they clearly have no idea what that possibly is, but that part is just exciting. So I made the 105 group chat and then we filled another one. And then we filled another one. I mean, everybody just wants to network and be involved and talk about who's picking here and there, especially with no sports around. You know, with COVID-19, everyone just – Scott Fishbowl was like the perfect timing. Like there's that opportunity to talk about something. And even though football is not even here yet, everybody's just so excited about it.
I've never seen the Twitter community so excited about anything, really, to be honest.
Yeah, that's really true. I mean, this year, more than ever, we needed SFB. We needed the number of teams expanded to get more folks in there. And I don't know, Jared, I'm kind of jealous of you that your draft is actually still going. You know, my draft wrapped up in a week and that kind of ended the fun for me. We were actually at the beach last week and I had SFB going. I had a Devy auction going. And I had a free agent auction going in another league. So that was all during my beach week. And
slipping on a Corona or something, you know, just living the life.
Right. Now I'm back home with none of that to do. So, my timing was off, but it was a fun week.
So the before we jump into the first strategy here, you know, I was looking at on Roto Grinders, you know, Josh ADHD put out, obviously they had the ADP and things in there. You took McCaffrey and those top five guys, McCaffrey went, the earliest was first and the latest was third, you know, and those guys all went in that 1-7 area. To give our listeners an idea of how vastly different all the drafts were, Davante Adams, the earliest he went in one draft was 8th. The latest he went was 31st. I mean, think 23 spots between one of the top wide receivers in the league. Michael Thomas, the earliest was 3rd. The latest was 18th. I mean, Todd Gurley, somebody actually took Todd Gurley at 9th overall. He went 44. Derrick Henry, who just got that massive contract today. I don't know if you guys saw, but 4 years, $50 million, which, you know, you figure at some point people are going to learn that you don't pay running backs like that. But, you know, he went earliest at 3rd. The latest is 22nd. The biggest one, though, was Phillip Rivers went 25th. And in another draft, he went 132nd. You know, so like, throw the ADP out the window, you know, all these, that's why Scott making the scoring so unique and so interesting. Everyone pretty much came up with their own ideas. And we talked about the group chats. I was in the Thundercats, you know, Thundercats Ho. And that's what Shane Manila keeps calling us, the Thundercat Hoes. You know, there's great guys in there, DeBeezy and Jeff Lambert, Justin Boone, who actually had the highest graded draft out of anybody. And Peter Howard was in there and he had the 102. And I want to talk about his strategy first. You know, he came in and he went quarterback, you know, he went at the 3rd pick, he got Patrick Mahomes. And then at that 210, he went Kyler Murray. Yeah. What do you guys think of that possible strategy about banging out two top-notch quarterbacks that early based off what you see on the rest of his draft, based off the upside of those two players? What do you guys think of Peter's draft?
Go ahead, Ryan.
I love it. And of course, part of this, we're all benefiting from hindsight now that these drafts are mostly wrapped up, these teams are put together. But looking at Peter's full team, I can say that I love the way it worked out for him. He was able to get three, actually. I started to say a couple. He was able to actually get three running backs that pretty good chance they're going to be every week starters. Clyde Edwards-Helaire, Connor, and Kareem Hunt, and he's got some high upside wide receivers as well, Juju, Lockett, Cooks, Christian Kirk. So I love his team. And I mean, typically in a super flex league, whether it's redraft or dynasty, I'm building around that quarterback position. If it's a draft, there's a good chance that my first two picks, or two of my first three, at least, are going to be quarterbacks. So I definitely don't have any problem with what Peter did there. I mean, I talked about the easy decision of McCaffrey at the top, but I mean, for me, it wasn't a slam dunk. I definitely considered Mahomes or Lamar Jackson there, and eventually settled on McCaffrey. Looking at the quarterbacks, I thought I could get at 2-3, and Kyler was one that I was definitely hopeful would fall that far. I know he did for some people. That's another thing that makes SFB fun. And you know, you're in a league and you see how your draft is going, but there's 119 other drafts going on. So, you know, you look at another guy that took McCaffrey first overall, and then he gets Kyler Murray and Russell Wilson at the 2-3 turn, and you just feel like you're in the wrong league. But that's right. I didn't get quite that lucky, but I love what Peter did with Mahomes and Kyler there to start, especially with the quarterback scoring. We talked about the super flex format, but some of the scoring wrinkles that Scott threw in this year with every quarterback sack being a negative 1 point, which Kyler was a hot asset. I mean, he was a first or second round pick in basically every draft. I think he ended with a mid second ADP, but he was also one of the league leaders in sacks taken last year. So definitely if you took him as one of your first couple players, you're hoping that improves, or he could definitely be in for some negative point games.
I definitely knew based off of how many times, you know, Peter on Twitter, PA Howdy, obviously brilliant guy when it comes to numbers. Yep. And obviously he does senior writer over there at DLF. He sent me some of the, like some gifts of, I can't say what they said on air, but every time I took his guy, he was getting on me. Every time I took his guy, you know, we were just going back and forth, and it was a lot of those just fun moments. And when I asked him, he basically said, you know, he wanted to get 40% of those top 12 overall, you know, quarterbacks. He was looking to go high upside, keep the pressure on that quarterback run. You know, he wanted to take those two quarterbacks early and kind of create some panic in the room, which is a great idea. We talk about that a lot, especially if you're at one of the ends of the draft. If you create that panic and try to create a run one way or another. And then he said after that, he really focused on trying to get running backs that had that top 12 upside, you know, 37% of the top 12 seasons. And he really, I love this draft that he has. You know, he didn't really prioritize tight end, but he still got Austin Hooper. And I mean, he has one of the best drafts out of our particular group. And I loved the way he went about this.
Yeah. And I don't think you can go wrong with taking Patrick Mahomes in the first round, wherever you're picking. In the second round with Kyler, I feel like for me, I wasn't going for Kyler. I feel like there's a bit of uncertainty. I really like him in Dynasty. I just don't know if he's going to put up the year that people think he will next year, but we'll see. You know, you're putting a lot of faith in Kingsbury there and thinking that he could run an offense that's just gonna absolutely highlight and bring the best out of Kyler, which I'm just not sure what we have in Kingsbury yet. And that's what it comes down to. You know, he's got to prove himself as a coach for me. But then, like Ryan was saying, sometimes you wish you were in another division. I see Clyde Edwards-Helaire, he picked him up in the third round here, which I actually took Clyde Edwards-Helaire at the 201 in my draft.
Makes you a little hated jealous,
it.
Right?
Yeah, makes you hated jealous. That. You gave me the little barfy symbol when I send you that. I was like, come on, man. Like,
that was the earliest he went in any draft. I checked it
oh,
up
no,
on the
it
ADP.
Wasn't.
Yes, it was.
Oh, now you're
yes,
making
it
me
was.
Feel bad.
No.
Son of a bitch.
And no, it's a lot of fun just seeing how those kind of things go. You know, we put this tweet out there that you were coming on the show, and I was really surprised with some of the names that actually responded on there, and two of them, it was actually Michael Fabiano and Brad Evans. And they both, you know, responded there. They went best player available. So, you know, some of the guys from the big network, have they ever had the success in things? You know, when I was talking to Michael Fabiano, who he took the fourth pick, he said he wanted to go two strong quarterbacks, you know, two strong tight ends in the first half. And then he said, surprisingly, he found himself devaluing running backs, which like to him felt super awkward. I mean, he went Kamara at 4, which is the earliest that he's went. I love Alvin Kamara this year. And I debated between him and Zeke, but then Watson, Ertz, Galladay, Carson, Daniel Jones. Daniel Jones seems to be one of those guys that, like I said, is kind of jumping off the board here. Some of the guys from the major networks, I mean, have they had success in the past? Is that something that, you know, I mean, from past winners.
Yeah, you know, I'm actually not sure. Just thinking about the champions that I'm aware of, and I definitely don't know, I guess, all nine of them off the top of my head. But I mean, we've seen a mix of analysts and fans, and I think the analysts that I'm aware of are mostly, you know, not from ESPN or CBS or Yahoo or whatever. So I definitely wouldn't say that the bigger names in the industry have not had success, but just like we were saying before, it's a tough tournament to win. It's a tough league to win. And honestly, some of those guys, I mean, I think last year was the first year Matthew Berry had played. As it continues to grow, more and more guys are wanting to play. I will say, I know Mike Clay won, I think it was the second year. So that was before he was with ESPN. But, you know, if you're talking about like the biggest name to win or whatever, that it's probably him.
I think the one analyst who thinks he's going to win every year and he always wins on Twitter is our guy Sam Stompy Lane. You know,
he came
on the show. He showed us the belt. He makes those Twitter videos that none of us would ever make. But I mean, they're hilarious and they add to the appeal of the entire thing.
I don't know. I don't know if he's going to win the league, but Stompy's winning at life. So
exactly. Exactly. So the next thing I want to talk about is obviously the RB heavy draft. And that's one that Jared and I really subscribe to. And I saw on DLF, you guys just came out with the July ADP and it is littered with running backs at the top, you know, and Jared and I both started Dynasty in 2015. You know, obviously there's been a huge paradigm shift here. It used to be littered with wide receivers. You know, now you look at it, McCaffrey's one, Barkley's two, Zeke is three, Dalvin Cook is five, Kamara's six, Mixon seven, Miles Sanders nine, and Chubb at 12. I mean, that is hammered home with running backs, you know, and that's how Jared and I like to build our teams early now. But have you noticed that paradigm shift in Dynasty? And I mean, is that something that are you still team wide receiver early in drafts, or do you just kind of play it as it goes?
Yeah, I don't think you have to be. And I'm not even sure you can be team wide receiver. Probably about the time you guys were coming up, it, like you said, it was the complete opposite. You'd look at a first round of a draft or first round of ADP, and there might be, you know, 9 or 10 or 11 wide receivers in there and just one or two running backs. And now we're looking at a complete reversal of that. And I mean, it'll swing back at some point in favor of the wide receivers. But honestly, the depth of the wide receiver position right now, like there's just really no reason to invest in wide receiver before the third round, honestly. So I think the easiest path to take when you're drafting a new team in Dynasty is grab a couple of running backs early. Really, from no matter what draft position you have, get two running backs in the first two rounds, and then just hammer those wide receivers.
Yeah, and we started in 2015 after that phenomenal 2014 class, and I think that ruined us all there for a while. You know, we thought, and the only one, and I know you kind of coined this phrase, and we advocate it quite a bit here on the Dynasty Refinery, is that year one punt, and sometimes it's trying to move back and get those wide receivers and then fill in the running backs later. But in this particular draft, you know, I went Ezekiel Elliott, Eckler, Jonathan Taylor. You know, I was trying to load up on running backs. I sprinkled in Godwin there, which he'll make fun of me because I'm the biggest Chris Godwin fan. And, you know, we actually have a bet that we're doing the Waffle House Challenge. Are you familiar with what that is?
24 hours in Waffle House?
Yep. Yeah. So we have if Chris Godwin's not a wide receiver one, I'm going to be sitting at a Waffle House eating some waffles. So, I mean.
So what is it? You get an hour knocked off for every waffle you eat.
Okay. So that's the hardest thing, trying to figure out mentally how many waffles you're really going to try to eat. You know, the longer you're there, especially with COVID, this could get a little interesting.
We weren't planning for that.
No. I mean, I think COVID actually originated from a Waffle House anyways, but so some of the other guys that went with this draft strategy, and you pointed it out. I mean, wide receiver is just so deep. And at J Snack at DFF, you know, he's the host of Snake in the Draft podcast, great guy, Jacob Vines. He went CMC at 101, and then he took Jacobs 212, Aaron Jones 301, Chris Carson 412. You know, and that to me is just, you're not going to get a better grouping of four guys. But then the next guy that comes through here with the same kind of draft mentality, it's Harris time. Obviously, he's from True North Fantasy Football Broadcast. And he goes Mixon 112, Chubb 201, Jonathan Taylor 312, Clyde Edwards-Helaire 401, and then goes Lev Bell. So he goes the first five. Now tell me what you guys see there. Is there any pitfalls to those rosters about hammering home the running backs that early, or is that something you guys are really into before I tell you, you know, what their take was on it?
Well, I mean, there, you have to think when you spend your first four or five picks on a position, obviously you assume that the other spots are going to be weak. And I think the real concern in this league format is the quarterback position. But you look at Jacob's team, and he still gets Cousins and Jimmy Garoppolo, which are actually two for this format, this scoring with the scoring for completion percentage. Those are two pretty strong options. You know, normally we think of those guys as low end QB2s maybe, or mid QB2s, but I think they're both going to be better than that in this format. So I talked about these guys coming in with a plan. Jacob definitely did. And looking at his projected week one starting lineup, I love it. He grabbed Keenan Allen, Tyler Lockett, John Brown, all three of those guys could be wide receiver ones, should be wide receiver ones for their team. Actually forgot about Diggs, but anyway, you know, certainly strong contributors, and was able to get Hunter Henry as well, and picked up five tight ends. So some tight end depth there. Jacob's team, of the ones we're looking at tonight, I don't know, his and Peters are both pretty strong, but it might be my favorite.
Yeah, Jacob and I were talking during the draft, and we had similar type things. I mean, I sprinkled in Godwin there, but getting guys like, you know, I got John Brown in the 14th and Mike Williams in the 13th. And if you're going to go heavy on those running backs, you're going to have to get a bunch of wide receivers to try to make it pan out, because I feel like, I mean, you got to start three of them. And I don't think people were paying attention to that when they really went four running backs and two quarterbacks. And then it's like, uh-oh, I know the position's deep, but I got to start three of them, you know, and that makes things pretty difficult there. What do you see from both those draft strategies, Jared?
I mean, hey, he got the running backs there. I feel like he got a good mixture of guys that are going to have a heavy workload and catch some passes, which is going to be good in this scoring format. And he was able to get some decent receivers in Keenan Allen and Tyler Lockett. I don't know, man. All the crap everyone's been talking about Keenan Allen, I feel like he's that guy that nobody wants to touch, but he could be a steal in those later rounds. You just don't know who that new quarterback is going to latch to.
Most of us are in that dynasty mentality, and I found throughout the draft those guys that aren't those sexy players, you know, like Kirk Cousins, you know, like Keenan Allen, they fall in this kind of format because people are – they want that sexy new toy. And, I mean, is it smarter to take Kyler Murray in the second or – Kirk Cousins in the sixth, you know, and that's that mentality we all got to try to figure out there. And Harris ended up, you know, he got Tannehill, Burrow, and Minshew. You know, he ended up having a really good draft. And what they all said was they felt that running back with the, you know, the extra half point per rushing first down, and that's why I went Zeke in the first, and that extra half point receiving, they felt like that really benefits, obviously, a pass catching running back who's going to get the work. If you can get a bell cow in there, those guys give you a big advantage, in my opinion.
Yeah, and I agree. Like I said, it's a little bit of hindsight. I focused on the running back position early as well, of course, with McCaffrey and Eckler. Didn't take it as deep as those guys, but I kind of wish I had. I almost wish I had taken a running back instead of Jones in the – I think he was in the at the 4 or 5 turn. But going back to something else you said – I think you're totally right. Guys like Keenan Allen, some of these players that are viewed as boring or not, you know, not sexy on your roster, because this is the event that everybody's looking at. Everybody's posting their rosters, and you're getting critiqued for those picks you make. And then, you know, all these data guys are coming out with tools ranking the teams at the end, and there kind of is some pressure to perform well, you know, to win the draft. So I think that's a good point. Something I hadn't thought too much about. You can probably get some really good values on, or could have gotten some good values on Kyle Allen and or Josh Allen. Nope. Sorry. Keenan Allen. There we go. We'll get it. Keenan Allen, Kirk Cousins, and some of these guys that aren't necessarily normally exciting to have on your roster.
Man, if only you would have had that revelation sitting on the beach.
I know. No kidding. It's a little late now.
Hey, it might have been a mistake, but I'm glad you caught Josh Allen. My man, Shane Minella, actually drafted Matt Barkley at 112 because he wanted people to donate more money. And I joined the group chat a little bit late that day because I was working, and I'm like, Whoa, wait, hold on. Do we need to change this here a little bit? He took Matt Barkley at 112, you know, and he was like trying to get a little bit of more money here and for the event. And, you know, it was just fun the entire way around. The next one I want to talk about is a little bit different. You didn't see a lot of this type of draft, you know. Tyler Bielowski, from the co-host of Tyler and Eli's Fantasy Football Tip podcast, he went heavy wide receiver early. And I didn't see a lot of that when I was looking through the rosters. I mean, there were over 80 rosters submitted, you know, when I put this out there on Twitter, and he was one of the only ones. And I mean, I'm actually liking his team here when I look at it. He started out Michael Thomas, and then he went DeAndre Hopkins and Chris Godwin. I mean, to say those are your three wide receivers is fantastic, because you do get that. All three of those guys are going to be in the top 5 to 8 in first downs for sure. I mean, Godwin, I think, and Michael Thomas were 1-2 last year. So you're getting not only the receptions, but you're getting that extra half point for the first downs. And then he was able to get Aaron Rodgers and Tom Brady, which, again, we're looking at it. If you're looking at it from a dynasty mentality, and I keep trying to turn that switch off and get that dynasty, because I look at that and I'm like a little sick to my stomach, but then I'm like, wait, it is still redraft. So they both have top 10 potential. And then he comes with Montgomery, Ingram, and Gronkowski. Now, I asked him about Gronk, and he said he just wanted the stack there. He believes that's going to happen. So a little bit of a different mentality, but it really leaves him thin at running back here. You know, so what do you guys think of Tyler's draft here? What kind of chances, or how do you like that draft strategy?
Yeah, it's not one I would have tried, first of all. But again, he got some great value on the quarterbacks. Looks like he got good value on Gronk as well. I think I would guess he got Rodgers, Brady, and Gronk all below their ADP, most likely, knowing that he got them the fourth round or lower.
Yeah, that's a good point. Aaron Rodgers' ADP was 37, and he got him at 408. Brady was 41, and he got him at 505. So he got them considerably below where their actual ADP was. But again, in this format, ADP really isn't anything. It's just all over the place.
Yeah, so he certainly took some risk, and I think it probably worked out that he was able to grab those quarterbacks. Like I said, it's probably not a strategy I would have tried, but at the same time, if you're just drafting by ADP and kind of drafting that roster, you know, that anybody else could have drafted, you're not going to win this thing. You've got to try something different, whether it's your early draft strategy, whether it's punting on a position, whether it's going all in on that first waiver wire run. You know, you've got to do something to differentiate your team from the 1439 others.
Yeah, absolutely. And if you guys don't follow him, that's at Tyler Bielowski. He's a great guy. He runs a podcast with his son. He basically said to me, he's like, I always go zero RB, which is kind of a misnomer anyways, you know, late round RB, no matter what. He said, in this draft, he wanted to fill in those quarterbacks and tight ends before he even thought about the running back position. You know, so that's a little bit different. He said, as long as Brady, Gronk, and Godwin stack is really what he's really building up there. Yeah. Jet, did you try to stack any of your, you know, wide receivers with your quarterbacks and your tight ends, or is that a philosophy that either of you guys use?
I mean, I'm trying to pull up my team right now. I almost forget. It was so long ago since I made my
last You're still pick. Drafting, so we're envious of the entire thing. But.
Yeah, well, we've got one guy that's, like, in, like, the middle of North Carolina. I don't know. Apparently, there's no signal. So we're holding out. But it is kind of nice that, you know, we can take our time. I get about 2 picks a day. It's pretty relaxed. No, I did not apply that strategy at all on my team. I mean, I got – yeah, no, because my quarterbacks are Matt Ryan, Drew Lock, Derek Carr. I didn't get any other receivers. I don't know. I don't typically look at that. I try to look at the best value I can find. And then what I'm really looking for is guys that I think have incredible upside. And I don't really give a damn what the ADP is. It's just basically, when it comes to Scott Fishbowl, it's going to be a lottery ticket. You know, somebody who probably didn't even think that they were going to win it, or maybe is like, you know, I thought I had an okay draft, is probably going to win it. There's going to be guys that have amazing drafts that you know, they might get a winning schedule and get pretty far in it. But when it comes down to it, it's pretty much a lottery ticket. So I was taking guys like Clyde Edwards-Helaire at 201 and doing weird shit. And I mean, I don't know. I didn't really apply too much actual strategy of punting at positions, other than the fact that I had in mind that I felt like receivers were going to get pushed back because of the depth. And that's exactly what happened in ours. Like at the 5-6 turn, I got AJ Brown and Cooper Kupp. And I love that. And I was so glad that I did wait on receivers, because I was like, you know, and then I ended up getting Brandon Cooks as well, who could be the wide receiver one for Houston if he doesn't die of a concussion this year. So I thought that was really the only strategy that I applied in mine. And
AJ Brown's a great segue, because he was the guy that, you know, catapulted me into the playoffs, you know, deep into Scott Fishbowl last year, because he was that lottery ticket and he showed up out of nowhere. You know what I mean? We kind of all wrote him off here. The next draft strategy I wanted to talk about was from Mr. _ EB, you know, and he's the co-host of the Dynasty Playbook. He went tight end early, you know, and he goes with Travis Kelce and George Kittle. Now, in this format, that is a bit of a cheat code, you know, to be able to get those two guys back to back. And then he still was able to get Carson Wentz, Ryan Tannehill, and Drew Lock as his quarterbacks. And then he just tried to take as many, you know, running backs there in those first 10 rounds as he could, with Carson, Montgomery, Geis, and Rojo, which could pan out well for him. But what he really did was he just took a boatload of lottery tickets at wide receiver, you know, and this is, if they pan out, it's going to be good for him. You know, it's Michael Gallup, Jalen Reagor, N'Keal Harry, Brandon Ayuk, Denzel Mims, LaVisca Chenault. I mean, it's a great dynasty team, and we'll hope that some of these wide receivers really pan out. But to me, I always punt my tight end, and it's very difficult in this format when it's like, when you're possessed with a do you want to go Joe Mixon or George Kittle? You know, and it's, to me, I can't mentally get away from that I want my running back there. But he has a pretty decent team here by getting those positional advantages at the tight end. What do you guys think?
Yeah, I don't know. I kind of have the same like mental block as you do, Mike. Just taking a tight end over the stud running back or stud wide receiver or quarterback, honestly, is just something I've rarely been able to pull the trigger on. I did take George Kittle as my first pick last year, and I mean, that was fine. I mean, of course, he had a strong year, didn't score as many touchdowns as you would hope, but in general, I'm with you. That's not a strategy I could try. And I love my guy Ben. I'm going on his pod soon, but this is probably my least favorite team. I think he just you know, he had to take some chances at both running back and wide receiver because of the two early tight ends. And I mean, I'm not confident in David Montgomery or Darius Geis or, you know, Ronald Jones or a lot of these guys.
Yeah. I'm
worried about my boy.
I feel like this is a scenario where he got those two tight ends. He got Wentz and Carson and then Tannehill. And then it was like, I gotta fill this in. You know what I mean? Like I gotta find some ways to get as much upside as possible.
I think everybody that punted at RB was like banking on David Montgomery being some massive breakout RB1. I'm seeing that a lot, you know, guys punting on RB and taking Darius Geis and David Montgomery and just crossing their fingers for that.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, you're right though. If he hits on, I mean, he's got depth at running back. He's got four starters. So that's more than most. He's got lots of upside at wide receiver. So if he hits on those wide receivers, you're totally right. He's going to be a strong contender because he's above average at quarterback and he's got the best tight ends in the league. And when I say in the league, I mean across all 120 leagues.
It's very – we talked about this, but it's just hard for me when I leave a startup, you know, and I still have that same mentality – it's tough when you go two quarterbacks early or a tight end real early, because I never leave a startup feeling like it just doesn't look the same on paper. You know what I mean? You're talking about your squad here and you're like, man, I got Kittle in the second.
Yeah. That's but one I could have had running back.
That guy. Had. Exactly. And I don't know if that's just recency bias or things like that, but it just doesn't quite look the same when I leave there. And I do the same in Scott Fishbowl, you know?
Yeah. I mean, it's that opportunity cost. Like what are you giving up to get? I mean, it's a tough enough decision to say, I'm going to give up Mixon or Watson or somebody like that to get Kelce, but to make that call two times and give yourself that huge advantage at tight end, you're going to have to take lumps somewhere else.
Yeah, and he's banking on that those two guys really make up the difference of at least one, if not two starters who might be on the lower end, you know. The last draft I want to talk about is we're going to go from Mike Beers at Beerwater, obviously the co-owner at RotoViz. On the RotoGrinders app, he actually had the highest graded draft. Same thing that I had last year was number one value above picks, you know what I mean, like above ADP, with an average of 12.9 picks above ADP, which is phenomenal. But the way that he did it is kind of interesting. You know, he went Lamar Jackson and Kyler Murray, which that is in this rushing format where you get the rushing first downs. I mean, that is obviously that Konami code, you know, that is a potential league winning type quarterback, you know, room. Then he goes with Mark Andrews, which he, you know, pairs up with Lamar Jackson, hits three wide receivers I absolutely love: Kenny Galladay, Juju Smith-Schuster, and Robert Woods. All three of those guys could be wide receiver ones this year, you know, and we've been huge on Robert Woods this past offseason, really trying to hype him, and he's moved himself up. Then he takes Evan Ingram, so now he's got Evan Ingram and Mark Andrews, and then Jarvis Landry on top of that. I mean, he just hammers it home with wide receivers and tight ends. He gets Gronk, Gesicki, Michael Gallup. So now we get to round 12, and he has no running backs. So this is the closest thing I've seen out of all the drafts to a zero RB. But then his next 10 picks, he takes 8 running backs, you know, and he's got lottery tickets there where he's going to need an injury here with some of these guys. And they're in timeshares, but Kerryon Johnson, Tariq Cohen, Philip Lindsay, Tony Pollard, Chase Edmonds, Lynn Bowden. I mean, a lot of running back lottery tickets. Is this a scenario where, you know, maybe more of us should have been looking at possible, that I hate the term zero RB, but late RB? Should we have pushed that off in this kind of scenario? You know, every draft was different. We were just talking about how we really valued the running backs. What do you guys think of this draft?
Yeah, Mike was in the 101 group DM we had going, and prior to the draft, we were all discussing who we were taking at 101. For most of us, it was McCaffrey, and he was kind of that holdout that just kept saying, "I think I'm going with the quarterback," and so nobody really tried to talk him out of it. You know, Beers always has a unique strategy, and pretty early in the process, he made it clear that he was going zero RB and he was going to basically test it and see how far he could take it. So being on the corner, we would give each other those updates, and every time it was, no, I didn't like the running back options. I went with, I doubled up at wide receiver. I grabbed a wide receiver and a tight end. And I mean, honestly, we'll see how it works out, like with all these others. But I think Mike nailed the zero RB strategy. I mean, what you want to do with that is you want to give yourself a big advantage at every other position if you're totally punting running back. And he's done that. He's got basically two top five quarterbacks. He's got two top five tight ends plus two others who could be tight end ones in Gronk and Gesicki. And he's got a ton of wide receivers. You mentioned their names already. He even grabbed Antonio Brown and Laviska Shenault in the back half of the draft. And then when you're finally ready to commit to running backs, you know, at that point, you're already taking backups. You know, you're likely not getting any starters. He didn't, you know, if we're looking at depth charts, I don't think he got a single guy who's sitting atop the depth chart for his team right now, but he got a lot of these pass catching guys. You got a lot of players who are going to be on the field, like Tariq Cohen and Philip Lindsay and Kerryon Johnson. So if we even see really one of those starters go down with an injury, he might take this whole thing, honestly.
I know. That's what I'm looking at here. If Swift goes down and Kerryon takes over, well, Kerryon only played like 3 weeks before he gets hurt again. But
yeah,
you know, if Zeke goes down, he's got Pollard, Lindsey. I mean, Edmonds, those are elite handcuffs that you want to have in there.
With Antonio Brown with the chance of coming back yet. Yeah, he definitely took some risk here with some true upside. I love Chase Edmonds as well. You know, that was a good pick. And like you said, to start the year, he's got Tyreek Cohen, Kerryon Johnson, a few guys that he can plug in and just cross his fingers that some guys go down here. And yeah, that could be a really good team because he absolutely dominated at, especially tight end there. I mean, Mark Andrews, Evan Ingram, Rob Gronkowski, Mike Gesicki, that's pretty damn good.
He's loaded. I think this is one of my favorite drafts of what we've covered here. Obviously, I want to thank you sincerely for coming on. I mean, obviously, you've paved the way for a lot of us, obviously being, you know, I've heard different terms of, dynasty royalty. You know, some people say the godfather of dynasty, you know what I mean? But Ryan, we both totally respect everything that you do and are so thankful for the opportunity to be a part of Scott Fishbowl, to be a part of Dynasty Twitter. You know, I mean, it has really grown over the years where it's just a community we love being a part of because it's everybody builds each other up. It's so positive, you know, and there's so many other scenarios where, you know, I see a lot of different, you know, Twitter handles and things in different areas, and they don't build each other up like we do in the Dynasty community. And I love what you've done. Why don't you tell people anything that you're working on here, and where obviously most of us follow you. If we don't, you guys should be. But why don't you tell people where we can find you?
Sure. You can find most of my work at Dynasty League Football. I've got a lot of articles in the works there. So hopefully I kind of took a little break from writing over the past couple months, just kind of doing some things on the business side at DLF, but ready to get back into the writing. So I'll have some work coming out soon. Also getting back into the swing of things for RotoWorld. So I'll have some things there as well. And you can find me on Twitter at RyanMC23.
Thank you so much. We also want to give you, I don't know if you're doing any live drafts, but send you one of our draft boards from draftkits.co. You know, they're fantastic. We're doing one. Jared and I do a draft together. I actually do a draft with all my kids. So we ordered a board for that. You know,
it's heated.
And what's that?
It gets pretty heated.
Yeah. No, I got a whole Amish community.
I'm wrestling with 9-year-olds by the end of the night.
Yeah. It's so much fun just getting your kids involved and just being part of this community. So thank you so much. You guys can find me at Dynasty_DadFF. You can find Jared at Dynasty Refinery. Thanks again for tuning in and help us refine those Dynasty rosters for you.